This is session on warfare or integration, faith and science in today's world. As Darius just pointed out, many people see faith and science as two different worlds, or religion and science as two different worlds. Today and throughout the week, we'll talk about this relationship between faith and science. And some days we'll talk about religion in general, but Christianity most particularly is what we're most interested in, at least in the sessions this week. Although there are interesting discussions that can be raised about especially Eastern religions, Buddhism, and contemporary physics. Perhaps some of you are aware of the books that have come out on the Tao of Physics, the Dancing Woolly Masters. So there have been things written about Eastern religions and science, as well as the relationship between Christianity and science. And now there are just a plethora of books coming out about faith, religion, and science. It's kind of an exciting field to be in right now because it's sort of on the edge, and people are exploring new areas of ways of thinking about the relationship. What we're really talking about when we talk about it theologically or from the viewpoint of the church is the God-world relationship. What is God's relation to the physical world, which we can conceive of as including humanity, although oftentimes we think of the physical world we think of nature as that which is out there, the trees and the mountains. And if any of you were at the Bible study this morning, you'll probably already have guessed that there would be a little bit of dovetailing, a little bit of perhaps not overlap, but I hope some integration between what Terry is doing in the Bible study with the God-world relation as it's conceived in the Bible, and what we're doing here, talking about the God-world relation as we live it every day in dealing with the world of science, though we may not deal with that in an academic way, we're faced with what science is in our lives. We're faced with those kinds of issues most days of our lives because of our technological culture. So this also includes ideas about our images of God, as we talked about this morning. What is the relationship between God and nature, and who is the God who created and creates the world? This relationship between faith and science is an issue of what's called apologetics in theology. It's an area that's of interest for people who may have some questions about Christianity, whether or not one has grown up in the church. Sometimes issues of science sometimes raise questions about the faith. And so this is sort of an area that's viewed as outside of Christian teaching, but one that needs to be integrated in order to have a credible explanation of the faith for people for whom faith seeks understanding. One theologian put it. Someone back here raised the question of, if faith is about, or if we're talking about truth when we talk about the Christian faith, and if science is talking about truth, both with a capital T, are they two different truths? And is it possible that we can have two different truths, or are they different ways of approaching truth? Or are there different truths? Well, I hope we'll be able to get into that a little bit later too. How many of you studied science in school at one time or another? Okay, I expected most of you would have. Even though science changes all of the time, most of us have had some teaching about what the scientific method is, perhaps. Do any of you remember learning what was taught about the scientific method? Yeah. Maybe I should ask here. No, I'll wait till the discussion. See if you remember any of your... Well, I was taught the scientific method as a particular way of approaching knowledge. Experimentation, hypothesis, and theory development. And that, even at the time that I learned it in school, was given to me as the truth. That was a way of coming up with empirical facts. These are the things that we can be sure of in nature. This is concrete reality. And that's generally where the questions arise between theology or faith and science, particularly when what science has come up with seems to be in conflict with what has been taught by the church. So today we'll sort of give a general overview and talk about this relationship between science and faith, and then later in the week, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, I believe it is, we'll approach various issues that are of particular interest, I think, in relating the two. On Thursday, we'll deal with evolution and creation. I see that that's going to be the topic of tomorrow's Bible study as well, so I encourage you to attend that, and we'll hear a little bit, I think, about Terry's approach to creation. He won't be talking at length about evolution, but he'll do it from the aspect of study of Scripture. And then Thursday, we'll look at it in more depth in relating evolution and the story of creation. Then Friday, the session will be on physics, cosmology, and God. If any of you are aware of some of the contemporary the findings of physics in this century, just fascinating material. I don't have a strong formal physics background, but was very interested in learning about it. So that was one of the reasons I chose to continue my doctoral program in Berkeley in order to study physics and the relationship between physics and theology. So we'll talk about that on Friday. And then if any of you are here on the weekend yet, Saturday, we'll deal with views of God and nature. Again, this is basically what Terry's covering in the Bible study, but we will approach it from perhaps a more, I don't want to say a more secular view, but more of the history of views of God and nature, and what are some alternative or developing views that we might come out with. So you're very welcome. I encourage you to attend whatever sessions you can the rest of the week. Now, some of you have heard the theme for this summer's session at Holden, or the year, I'm not sure. It's something is afoot in the universe. And I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but that phrase, that sentence, was taken from a writing by Teilhard de Chardin. Any of you know of his work, of his writing? Yeah, a few of you do. He was a French person who lived earlier in this century, who was a Jesuit priest, and he was also a paleontologist, studied the rocks. As we have a geologist among us here, actually as a paleontologist studied fossils in the rocks. So he, in his work with fossils, he dealt a lot with evolution of life, of course. And many of his writings were about evolution and the relation between evolution and faith. At the time he wrote, even approaching evolution from a standpoint of faith was very controversial. And the Catholic Church banned his writings, and they were not published until after his death, and then translated almost immediately into English, and have become very popular within a very short amount of time. I'd like to read that quotation for you, that phrase is taken from. Something is afoot in the universe. A result is working out which can best be compared to a gestation and birth. the birth of a new spiritual reality formed by souls and the matter they draw after them. Laboriously, by way of human activity and thanks to it, the new earth is gathering, isolating, and purifying itself. It goes on a little bit further there. Stop there. Teilhard had a vision of the evolution of humanity as and of the earth as sort of a co-evolution, that human beings are involved in a process. And as Phil Hefner has put it, a theologian at the Lutheran Seminary in Chicago, we are created co-creators. And this is what the vision that Teilhard had of something being afoot in the universe. It was this life process that Teilhard saw as God at work in the world and in the universe. But at his time, this idea was fairly radical, and even now, most of you are aware that a lot of people still have trouble with the ideas of evolution because it has seemed contrary to what the Bible has taught. We'll get into that. I'll hold off on that until later in the week. There are several ways of viewing the relationship between theology and science, or faith and science. Ian Barber has written extensively about the relationship. One book that came out in the early 60s is now sort of a classic in the field. The bookstore hasn't received it yet, so I'm not sure if you probably won't be able to pick it up here, but if you're really especially interested in the issues, I encourage you to look for it. Ian Barber is the author. He is a physicist who also has a theology degree, I believe from Harvard. He's teaching at Carleton College in Minnesota. Some of you probably know that. The book is called Issues in Science and Religion. It's just an excellent background to the whole issue. It covers the history about Galileo and Darwin. It talks about the methods of science and theology. And this is a good bit of what I'll be talking about today. Much of it is based on Barber's work. He was sort of one of the early, maybe a pioneer in the field of science and religion. He's still active now, and next year we'll be giving the lectures in Scotland. Is it the Templeton lectures? At any rate, Gifford lectures, I'm sorry. And he's known to be, he's a very fine authority in the field. And there are a few people in the Lutheran Church working on this now. Phil Hefner has been working on it for a while, and at the end we'll talk a little bit about the center there in Chicago and the one in Berkeley. Okay, Barber talks about different ways of viewing the relationship between theology and science. One, and from which I drew the title for this session, was that theology or faith and science are in warfare. This idea, or this word, came from a book that was written in the early 20th century, late 19th century, after the Darwinian controversies, which was called The History of the Relationship, the Warfare Between Theology and Science. That was one person's view of the issue. And I think many people who I talk to still today see the two as in conflict. They don't see how they can be reconciled. Another view is that, and well, these are sort of working along a continuum. Another view, a little farther this from the end of conflict, next to it, the continuum would be that they are independent and autonomous. That they sort of go their own ways and don't necessarily have to intersect at all. They're just, science operates in its realm over here, and it's a question of different methods, perhaps different languages, and religion, faith operates over here, and they don't ever have to come into relationship. A third way of viewing it is that they are complementary, that they have complementary languages, that one aids the other one in understanding the world, that they're different forms of knowledge, different languages, but they complement each other. And then the fourth view, and there could be others along a gradation, the fourth view would be that they can be integrated, that together they form a unity of knowledge and a unity of worldview, view about humanity and about nature. Now, there are lots of reasons that the history of the relationship probably is weighted more on the side of the conflict and or independence, at least over the last several hundred years. I think for many people, our understanding of nature and history lends itself to this division between the two. We think of nature as that which is the object of study of the sciences, and of history as something different from that, rather than seeing that nature itself has a history along with humanity, and that the history of humanity is very much tied into nature. So this dichotomous view of nature and history can contribute to a split between our views of faith and science. Related to that is also the mind-body dualism that you may hear of that in writing, current writing that's spoken of often. We're trying to get away from a dualism. We're trying to see people as integrated wholes, that the mind and body function interdependently. But I think in the history of both science and theology, perhaps we have viewed them as separate, and or the spirit as very different from our physical nature, and we've thought that Christianity, the faith, talks to our spiritual side, and science talks about our physical side. Well, I don't think they're quite that easily separated. Now, let's see. Okay, we've begun a little bit to talk. Those are then a continuum of ways of viewing the relationship. We've talked a little bit about scientific method and the way that oftentimes science is seen as coming up with the brute facts, and oftentimes religion is seen as dealing with personal faith or opinions about things, convictions, commitments, but maybe doesn't have much to do with cognitive, with facts or with cognitive ways of knowing. Some of you perhaps, getting back again into the history a little bit, some of you perhaps saw a movie about Galileo some time ago. I did not see it. I'm hoping to catch it yet. But occasionally you'll see things on public television, or if you ever see something coming up, take note of it. They're often very interesting. The history of science is just fascinating. Some of the things that just in learning how theories have developed is very different from the way that many of us have been, the impression many of us have gotten from school or from the popular press in years past. At any rate, at the time of Galileo, you're probably aware that the church was very displeased with what Galileo was teaching about, was sort of a new way of viewing the solar system, and it seemed to be a threat for church leaders at the time. So Galileo was kicked out of the church. And later in Darwin's time, I think you may or may not be aware of the history there, but there were several religious leaders who were just adamantly opposed to Darwin's theory and did everything they could to try to oppose it in schools and in the public press. And, pardon?
Same thing today.
Oh, yeah, it's continued, renewed, I think. It's been a renewed attack on evolutionism.
There were a number of scientists, too, that were
opposed. Oh yeah, sure.
Idea.
Yeah, right. That whole history of thinking on evolution is fascinating too, because it's not just one idea. There are many ways of viewing evolution. Again, we'll get into that a little later. Barber's comment about these two incidents was that the church in that case was not competent to judge about these scientific matters. The church was looking at it from a very protective and defensive standpoint. And I think, of course, in time, that stance of the church has changed, as we're all well aware. But it's not that long ago that the Catholic Church changed its teaching and allowed, as we learned about Teilhard, that was that in the 30s, I believe, that he died, I think, in the early 50s, early around 60, yeah, okay, 57.
Easter Day.
That's right, yes. And even at the time of his death, his works were only published by friends who got them, who had them published, still probably against the, they didn't ask the church at that point. But on the other hand, in the history of science, there were scientists who didn't help the relationship. I get more specific. We can look at it more generally later, perhaps. Have any of you heard the term God of the Gaps? You may or may not have. This is an interesting idea, and one that's talked about a lot in the study of theology. And it was actually scientists who sort of got this idea going. Newton, in his explanations, Isaac Newton lived around 400 years ago. His theories of physics have been dominant for 400 years, until the early part of this century, and some of them still hold. But he was a very faithful Christian and wanted to, felt his work was being faithful to his Christian beliefs. And he wrote that at these points where scientific explanation failed was where God came in. What couldn't be explained by experiment, Newton would explain by this is what God takes care of. And that kind of view continued for quite a few years, and eventually that became very problematic, because as science kept explaining more and more, you can see how God got squeezed into a narrower and narrower function within that way of viewing reality. And until the modern day, when many people, maybe even who have been brought up in the faith, when they learn about scientific facts, if they have this view of God as filling in the gaps in our scientific knowledge, becomes a very big problem. It seems like there's just no room for God in that view of the world. We could talk a little bit about some of theology perpetuates this view of the separation as well. One of the theologians of early this century, Karl Barth, whose theology is very powerful and has held sway for quite a while, emphasized revelation of God in human history. And for him, this was the exclusive realm of God's action in the world. He really didn't have much use for, and really spoke out against, what was called natural theology, which was a way of finding something of a proof for God's existence in the realm of nature and in design in nature. Okay, we'll just take a few more minutes before we get into discussing some of this and your views of it. Okay, we've talked a little bit about the different types of knowledge that people think of as science providing technical knowledge and religion providing personal knowledge of art and commitment to life. It's been seen as two different realms. But we've been learning recently in the philosophy of science, things that have been written over the last 20, maybe 30 years, even more has been coming out over the last 10 or 15 years, about the nature of science itself. I think one of the problems in for people who see this relationship as conflictive is that they see science as this discipline of hard facts, and aren't able to see the social factors and other things that come into the formation of scientific theory. Floyd, who's a geologist, probably could tell us, and I'm not sure if it's so true in geology as some of the other scientific fields, but theory development involves a bit of creativity. It's not just the hard facts. The facts themselves don't necessarily lead to any one theory or another. It's the human scientist looking at those facts who's, along with his or her creative energy, that brings up these scientific theories. Theory of evolution, Einstein's theories. Einstein himself wrote about the role of creativity in the formation of his theories of relativity. We've also learned that, especially with quantum mechanics, anybody know what quantum mechanics is? We may talk about that a little later. I won't get into it in too much depth. But just very briefly, it's been found out that the observer in an experiment of subatomic particles, the very tiniest level of matter, of reality, of matter and energy, the observer influences the data. The results of the experiment are not just hard and cold facts, but are actually changed because of the scientist observing them. The instruments, at that tiny, tiny level of observation, the instruments themselves influence what's going to come out of the experiment.
Excuse me, I think you mentioned the dancing Muli masters. Mm-hmm. I'm an English teacher, and I don't know very much about science, but I do know that book is clear enough for me to understand what you just said.
Yeah, great.
That's a really, really good book.
Yeah, I've only read parts of it, but I've heard that it's very good, yeah, especially on Eastern thought.
It's a very good point, because I think that there's a lot of humanness in creativity, and you can gather all the facts you want, but very often the it's a kind of a leap of faith or a leap of creativity that allows you to actually see and put together, synthesize and put together what this thing may have been or may have worked like. Mm-hmm. And another aspect of this is that we sometimes view scientists as being very objective people. Scientists are human, and they're no that they seem to think. You can read that in all kinds of examples that occur.
Right. Yeah, thanks. In addition to the role of creativity, even the very types of things that are studied are influenced by social factors. Many of you are aware that a lot of scientists get grants to study one thing or another. So the types of research that are done depends on where the money is, what kind of grants are going to get supported. So that, in a sense, influences the direction of scientific research and the development of knowledge. So looking at those views, which may be a little bit new way of looking at science, and seeing theology as, I think we can all see it as having both a cognitive side. We say that we state propositions that we believe and think that that has some kind of truth value, at the same time that it involves our emotions and our commitment. So Barber and most others working in the field, and myself included, are working toward a more unified view of humanity and of the world, God's action in the world. Now, basically, I've been talking about about science as a form of knowledge, not so much of technology, which is where it hits most of our lives, perhaps. We can talk about that further if you'd like to. Now, I'm about finished here, but before we get into discussion, I want to just mention a couple of resources. As I said, this book is a very good one, Issues in Science and Religion. If you know anybody struggling with these issues, I would recommend that. If you know any young people who are studying science, having trouble with integrating their faith in science, it's a good one. There are a couple of places, if you're very interested or know someone who might be, where you can get involved, get on a mailing list, and get involved in that way. One of them is in Chicago. It's at the Lutheran Seminary there. It just started up this last year and is in sort of a formative stage. It's called the Faith and Science Center. It's located at the seminary in Chicago. And the other is, there are several around the country. The other one that I will tell you about is in Berkeley. It's one that I've worked with, and my advisor is director of the Center for Theology and the Natural Sciences. So if any of you are interested, I have some information about that later. But now I'd like to open it up and ask you what your feeling has been, what your experience has been. Does it seem to be a problem for you, the teachings of science and the teachings of the faith?
Mm-hmm. It isn't a problem for me, but I recall when I was in a church youth group, the challenge of science were perhaps the most important reason, I think, that people I knew in that group stopped coming to church.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I've suspected that a long time, and
that was a number of years ago, and I suppose it still goes on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the church failed to put science in perspective. There's nothing useful about discussion.
Yeah. I think it really didn't know how. But did you want to say more?
No, it's just that it never came up in youth discussions.
Mm-hmm. Even in my... Darius, did you want to say something?
I was just thinking of a conversation I had with Joel Sittler once, and I kind of Abraham of American Lutheranism, about where do you go today to be on the cutting edge of theology? And he says, don't talk to a theologian, talk to a physicist, was his answer. Hmm. And those are the people that are gaining at the cutting edge of ambiguity and of unknowns, and they're not afraid to push that further. And his belief was, wherever you push to the ends, truth is found there. And theologians tend to be more concerned about doctrine and holding and conserving nowadays, there's exceptions all over the place, than pushing at the edges.
Yeah, I think that it's just now becoming more prevalent for people with science background to be in seminary. In general, people who have gone to seminary in the past studied the liberal arts, and of course that's the background you need to study theology, history, English, religious studies, and so many of the students did not have much of a background in science, and for them it never became a question. But I think that it can be threatening, because when you open these questions, it can, you're not sure where you're going to come out, perhaps. So I think that people may have avoided the questions because they didn't know the answers. We still don't, you know, have all the answers. I don't claim to have all the answers. We're still working on it, sort of an ongoing process. But I think it's very important in the church.
But the physicist knows that. I mean, some physicists, right. They know they don't have the answers.
Yeah.
And some theologians think they do. And I say that as I think a theologian, not as a physicist.
Yeah. Yes.
For each door you open, there are always more doors.
That's right. Yeah.
It seems that with the progression of advances in science and technology, you know, the quantum leaps, the half-lives, you know, first it was, you know, stages of equal technological advancement take half as long, and then half as long, and then half as long, which to me is saying that for the church to be able to speak to science and technology and say, oh, okay, yeah, we have some questions on this too, but we're trying to deal with this. We're going to be dealing with more technology, more advancements, more knowledge. It's like television, saturation point.
Right.
And unless there's some attempt to deal with it, with all that information, and theology relating to that, we're going to be in a muddle.
I mean, I think some of the issues are more fundamental, because they don't necessarily get left behind when there's some new advance. You know, they're basic issues, yeah, about the relationship between science and religion.
Yeah, both of you have made good points. There is a continual advance in science. There's no way that any one person, especially someone who doesn't have a real strong background in physics or in the hard sciences, can keep up with the advances, the details of the theories. They change continuously and with technological development. But behind that are some more basic issues that carry through the advances in theory and in technology.
And there's also the feeling, I guess, or the I'd say feeling rather than the belief, but on my part, that there seems to be a mystery, and science is in search of mysteries. The information and the theological implications in some points. Are we ever going to say, we've found the answer? We proved it all.
That's a real interesting point.
No.
There was a point where just before Einstein did his work in the late 19th century, maybe you've heard about this, where physicists wrote, and many believed that they were within reach of having all the laws of nature within their grasp. They thought that they would have it all explained. And then within a few short years, Einstein came up with things that just changed what was accepted for hundreds of years as the only way of viewing it scientifically. It just changed it all.
I remember this one essay by Einstein that I taught in an advanced comm class in high school. It was called Science and Religion, and it was an excerpt from the essay. I bet you've read that. Anyway, he started out by saying that there is no conflict between science and religion as long as they stay in their areas. But he went from that to say that science and religion will be mutually helpful, particularly because he felt that science was at the point of finding the one basic law that governed the universe. And it was a really optimistic essay, and he said, and of course that will be the biggest miracle of all. But then I found that same thing in that chapter in the Dancing Woody Masters, and when I read that, that was a very thrilling moment to find that what would have been 50 years apart It's not two people writing the same thing.
Mm-hmm. And that was that they're complementary, or that they can...
They are complementary in the sense that there is a basic log, one basic law governing the universe, and that when scientists find that, then theologians will know how to deal with it.
Hmm. So in those writings, you felt that they were saying that this basic unifying law has something to do with God? Is that
Einstein said that so clearly in his essay. Mm-hmm. And that's why when people have said he was an atheist, I figure they probably never read anything like that. Because he said it very clearly.
He says some very interesting things about God. He's real fascinating. I had a class last fall called Einstein in a Theological Perspective, or Einstein as a Theologian. It was really fun stuff. But most people are so, I think, very intimidated by scientific theory, so they don't read much of his writing for that reason. But he's really fun to read.
His letters in particular.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He wrote about science.
Yeah, right. He gave his very heavily philosophical views of about science.
Have you personally talked to not theologians who go into science like Hefner, but scientists who are just really on the cutting edge? And do you have any thoughts about the mystery of life according to them? And, you know, they're kind of mystics in themselves, you know. They don't use God talk, but they sure do. They sure are spiritual people.
They're exciting people to work with.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
But some of them aren't.
Right.
And they despise mystery, and they're convinced that they're going to stamp it out forever. and this is sort of the fundamental kind of atheism that you find in science.
Oh yeah, that's still there. Sure.
Well, I would call that person a technician and not a scientist.
Well, they're very difficult to talk to.
Mm-hmm. What person would you be talking about?
I'm thinking in particular of a physicist, I know. Yeah.
An individual physicist.
Yes. Yes, but I think he's kind of an extreme example of the type.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think there is a broad range among
them. Yes, and there's another physicist I know who teaches relativity, who is a lay Baptist minister.
So, oh, yeah. Huh.
Which I just found astonishing.
Interesting. Yeah, the gentleman who is one of my advisors, who has his PhD in physics, is very concerned about faith in God and science. He's devoted his life work to it, and his inheritance. he's just giving it all to, because he feels that it's so important, such an important issue for the faith to be work for the church to be working on. But he, in contrast to what Derry said, is not really interested in the mystical side. He's interested in it dealing with the mainline Christian tradition and mainline Christian teachings, which may or may not, depending on your perspective, include the mystical tradition. But it's just another step to the mystical, which others have written about in regard to physics. Because physics itself, in some of the quantum physics, etc., I won't say it's mystical, but people who have mystical leanings can see the mystical in quantum indeterminacy. So.
How are those people? Let me put it this way: Pierre de Chardin was ostracized from the scientific community because he was bringing in all of this religious stuff all the time. And was ostracized from the theological and church community because he was bringing in all the scientific stuff all the time. And he was kind of a person without a home, even though being a Jesuit, had a home in that sense. In today's world, How are, the only ones I know, because I'm just an amateur at this, like the Tao of physics, but there must be something that's more accepted in scientific circles that has some of that leanings, or is that all kind of off far fetched out there that real scientists really don't give a lot of study to?
There's a continuum. Bob says that among his colleagues, there are some who are interested and some who think he's just way off base to even try to talk about religion and physics in the same sentence. The same breath.
Can you relate any specific ways in which scientific fact has been dealt with in theological terms?
Oh, yeah, well, let's see. What would be a good one? I don't know if evolution is the most readily available, perhaps, for us in creation. Or were you thinking of more in the physics? Were you interested more in the physics realm?
I'm wondering how concrete or loose the tie in trying to explain or deal with the same set of facts in perhaps two different ways of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
There's
black holes.
Yeah, right. And the idea of Taurus universe, where the universe is just a big circle, basically. Of course, that's not been proven, so that's just a theory.
Mm-hmm.
But are there scientific discoveries that have been validated by experimentation that someone has come along and said, yes, I've been thinking about that, and this is what I think,
Relation
to faith and life.
Yeah. Well, let's use the example of the expansion of the universe. That's probably a good one to get at this. The theory of the expanding universe is that because of things that were seen, and there is data for this, there's a redshift in the... maybe some of you can help me on this. There are several reasons for which that evidence points to the fact that the universe is expanding, that the sun, our solar system is moving farther apart from the other, our galaxy itself and the other galaxies are moving farther apart from one another and farther apart from a center, if there was a central point. And because of this data and the idea of the expanding universe, it's been theorized that the beginning was in a Big Bang, an explosion, that at one point, and that there was a point when T equals zero, theoretically, the universe was incredibly dense and hot, and it exploded because of the density. It was so highly compressed, and that out of that explosion, the universe has been forming, has been expanding ever since. So that scientific theory, and that's the one we'll probably get into a little more later in the week, by some theologians has been interpreted as being the moment of creation, that this was the beginning point in time at which God created the universe. Now that's a good one to discuss, because that's one that we've discussed, that Bob and some of the others have been working on or have been writing about. One philosopher of science at Notre Dame, a Catholic theologian named Erna McMullen, has written about that in regard to how we do relate religion and science. And he doesn't like to see that kind of using scientific evidence to support a Christian doctrine, and I tend to agree with him, because it can end up in another God of the Gaps kind of argument that, well, when we explain the moment beyond or before t equals zero, if science happens to find out that's actually an oscillating universe, that before this point there was another universe that had compressed to that density. And so there are many types of scientific theories about the expansion, the expanding theory. But that's one that has been related to Christian teaching.
You know what I think about? Thinking about Christian teaching is in Sunday school, for example, and I was thinking about the materials that are available to 5th and 6th graders, 7th and 8th graders, for example. Nothing that deals with this. We're completely silent about it, and yet the kids go to public schools, and the question is there, and they go to high school, and they're turned off, and they go to college, and somebody talks about the Christian myth, and there they meet it, and there is no preparation that we've given them in our church schools to meet this.
Yeah. That's a very good point.
Some would prefer not to have a talk.
Well, yes.
Pardon? You mean some?
Some would prefer not to have a talk.
In the church?
That's quite a lot of, especially evolution, not only equal time, but I think some of those would just as soon not have it, to have their children exposed to that kind of,
mm-hmm.
because if your faith is simple, you don't have any questions to answer. You know what I mean? There are no questions.
It turns out that each theory also raises its own questions, and in particular the expanding universe one. If you look very carefully at the properties of the expansion, it becomes rather remarkable that it could be expanding in just this way.
Right.
You know, why are all the physical constants that govern everything just so? You know, if they've been a few points off this way or that, it would have worked differently.
Have you read heard of that cosmic anthropic principle?
Yes.
It's a book written about that very idea.
Okay, so how do you, in your study of theology, how can you tell me that you, or my child, that how you relate your theology to your science?
Did you want to get in here?
Back way up, if we believe that God created this universe, this world, everything in it, how he did it is something that's very exciting that we as Christians should be involved in discovering.
Right.
Who better to look at how this all fits together than someone who believes in a huge God that can put all this together and do all of this, and with the understanding that all the way along the line we're going to see unclearly.
Very good. That's very true. Thank you very much for plugging in there. That's very true. Not that I wanted to avoid your question, because I don't feel like you're putting me on the spot at all, because I'd like to follow up on that. I find science really exciting. To me, it's just, it's part of what God has given us. I find human knowledge just a marvelous gift of God, and that we have been able to discover as much as we have about the universe is, I think, is just exciting. And I don't really see, unless our concept of God is very narrow, I don't really see how scientific thought needs to be a threat to faith.